Welcome to Cashflow Positive. I'm your host, Kenny Bedwell, founder of SCR Insights, one of the leading data platforms in the industry. Through using data and analytics, I've been able to replace my W-2 with cash flow from my successful short-term rentals. And my goal is to help you achieve the same freedom and success. Whether you're a seasoned investor or just a novice looking to make your mark, Cashflow Positive is your go-to resource for unlocking the full potential of your property portfolio.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Cashflow Positive. I'm your host, Kenny Bedwell, and today we're going to do something a little different, similar to the part one episode. We're talking about markets to avoid investing in. Don't invest here. And it's going to be a really, really fun episode. And the reason why is because normally, I know when you're used to it, it's like, hey, where should you invest? And I'm talking positively about places you should go. This episode, I'm going to be a little bit more negative, just from a long-term growth perspective, and also just kind of what I'm seeing in the markets today, and also data and insights and all that good stuff. Now, a couple of disclaimers. I gave a lot of disclaimers in the part one episode, so please don't message me after this episode and try to lay stuff on me, and I'll just tell you to go back and listen to part one to ease any of your anxieties. But I do want to give a general disclaimer again, even though I said it in the first part one, is I don't care. It's not necessarily that I hate certain markets. Okay, it's not about the markets themselves being bad or terrible or whatever. It's more about the competition in the level of competition in the amount of competition in that market. Okay, so what I'm basically saying is if you invest there personally, or if you're an agent, realtor, lender, whatever, I'm not attacking your market on purpose because I hate it. It's just more so what I'm seeing there. And also understand too, I didn't mention this in the part one episode, but this is really important to understand, is that I'm speaking to people who have typically less than five properties, okay? Whether they own or manage five or less, all right? So we would call those people rookies or beginners or whatever, even if they have less than five, okay? Now, not everyone listening to this has got less than five, but I understand that is the majority of the people who listen to my content have less than five properties. That's okay, but I understand that I'm speaking to them. That's the base audience. And I do not encourage people, especially beginners, to go to places that are highly competitive where there's a steep learning curve. Okay. I want to set them up for success so they have a positive experience with short-term rentals, and then they can level up to maybe some of these more competitive areas because they have the experience and knowledge and the know-how, not the, hey, I'm trying to set up my Airbnb listing. Should I do the photo tour or not kind of thing? Okay. Or, like my listing's been sitting and I have no reviews. Like, why am I not getting any bookings? That's what I help a lot of people with. And, everyone else, if you've been in a market for a while, you know the ins and outs of that. Okay. Even myself, trying to get into a market that you've been in for many, many years, you're going to whip my butt every single time on knowing what the right pricing is and knowing the correct listing optimization and how to target the right guest avatar and every single thing, because you have experience. You can't beat experience in a certain market. The problem I see that doesn't correlate well is that realtors, they take that experience and they try to say, look, that you can be successful here, which is true because they've proven the model. And, this is all you have to do. But the reality is it isn't that simple. Okay. And they try to say that the experience is easy to gain, but experience comes from actually doing it. So there's a learning curve there, and we want to minimize that learning curve as much as possible in the right areas. So I'm trying to help people understand that there aren't necessarily that certain markets have really steep learning curves, and why waste your time or why go through the heartache of learning the hard way and spending a lot of time trying to just cash flow positive when you can go to another market and not have to put in as much effort. So that's where I'm coming from. So if I get an angry message, I'm going to tell you to listen to this part of the episode, because you probably didn't. Okay, let's do it. So I made a video on YouTube. It's on the SCR Insights channel, by the way, of top 10 markets to avoid. I'm going to mention some of the markets here. I'm not going to go on a list, but I am going to answer a lot of particular markets that I get questions on that are really popular that people think. And I'm just adding one more to the list that I thought of that I need to mention. Okay, well, we're going to go around the country and we're going to talk about markets. There's not really a particular order. We're just talking about the pros, but a lot of the cons. This is a cons episode, okay? So I don't usually do these. And the reason why is they're you know, they're usually negative. Okay. And it's, I don't have a negative outlook on the STR market. I have a very positive outlook, but there is a negative outlook on certain markets and it needs to be talked about. So let's get into it. I think we're ready. Okay. So number one, there's a couple cities. Now, cities usually scare the crap out of people anyway. So you usually say, oh, don't invest here. Don't invest in cities. Yeah, I mean, most people know that. And it's because of the regulatory risk, okay? So there's a couple cities, though, that are a little more vacation rental friendly in general, or people travel to them to vacation. So let's take an example of like Miami, Florida. So Miami, Florida, the city itself, remember, I'm talking about the city, not outside the city. There are differences. So please don't come at, once again, do not come at me if you're thinking I'm talking about a Fort Lauderdale or Hollywood or any of those other areas north of there that are actually decent vacation rental markets, not just hotel and resort markets. But a Miami, Florida, like a South Beach area, you can't tell me that's a good market to go STR in, okay? Even buying a condo, one of those like really cool new fancy condo hotels in Miami is a terrible idea. They're overpriced and they're super expensive, but the regulation is starting to get really, really particular. Not only Miami, but we're seeing this in other cities too, like Las Vegas, Nevada. So in Las Vegas, they have a rule, get this, you cannot STR, have a short-term rental, within 2,500 feet of a resort or hotel. And you can't have an STR within 660 feet of another STR. So where the heck are you going to STR there? Probably nowhere, because they don't want you to. The hotels and the resorts in these areas that have a strong presence, like a Las Vegas or a Miami or even Orlando. Okay. And we'll get to Orlando in a second because that's a different animal in and of itself. But these markets, these city markets, these urban markets, I should say, are dominated by these hotels and resorts. So I really avoid investing in that type of market or those or looking in those markets because it's super competitive. And there's only certain very small areas where you can STR. And it just doesn't make sense when you look at the numbers. They're too expensive. So housing prices kill a lot of opportunities. And that's what you're going to see in a lot of the markets that we're going to talk about. Okay, so we talked about Miami. And I've got top 50 or top 20 of don't invest here. I'm just going to talk about some general like themed ones and actually do some like answer some questions I've gotten about certain markets too at the end that I think are going to be helpful for some of the listeners here. Okay, so let's move from that and talk about, let's go ahead and hit Orlando. I think Orlando is not a great market to invest in. And here's why. I've experienced that I've learned, which was interesting. So every year we go to Disney World for my daughter, or it's become a thing now. It's 3 years now. We're going to Disney World for my daughter's birthday in January. And we have stayed the first 2 years, we stayed in Airbnbs. Okay. And they were okay. Proximity, like 10, 15 minutes. The Airbnbs, like number one, so we're going to Disney World, remember that. Number, and we did do Universal and Disney World 1 year, but regardless of that, okay. Airbnbs are 10 to 15 minutes away. That's as close as you can get for an Airbnb, a short-term rental, okay, for Disney World. You still have to hit traffic. Okay, so you got to get traffic and you got to park. Okay, and because you're not staying on site, you can't get in early to the parks. Okay, you have to go in at the normal opening hours, which is 9 a.m. So you're leaving about, I don't know, 30 to 45 minutes before the park opens from a 10 minutes away. I mean, if there's traffic in the morning, it ends up being longer. So just to get to the park. And then you got to do that to go home. And it's just as crazy, just as busy. And there's a ton of traffic in that Kissimmee, Orlando area to get into the parks and just around in general. And it's really, really painful to get in there. So the third year, we said, hey, screw it. Let's stay at one of the resorts at the park. And we don't have to rent a car. We don't have to worry about, you know, all the different stuff. And we actually did the monorail. We did the Polynesian. So we did the monorail instead, which we can just go right to Magic Kingdom and whatever parks that monorail, Epcot, or take a bus. Okay. So we're not worrying about all this other stuff, transporting all these things and parking and traffic and all that. And we get into the parks early. We can quickly go back to the hotel and eat and all this good stuff. And it just dawned on me. I'm like, this is so much easier, so much smoother than trying to stay in an Airbnb. And they weren't like really like, sure, the resorts are a little bit more spendier, depending on where we stay. But overall, like, wasn't that much of a difference. But the difference was the stay, the type of stay, and the like, I just didn't have to worry about a whole lot. There's a lot less stress. And I was like, well, why the heck were we even doing the Airbnbs before? Was it just to save a dime, or was it just because I'm, well, I got to stay in a short-term rental? And that's how I felt when I switched over to, you know, staying at the resorts. And now it's like stress-free. I'm just going to do that from now on. And I realized that short-term rentals in that area will always be second place, no matter how themed out they are, no matter how cool they are. Even I get it. If you have a 10-bedroom in Orlando, you know, that hosts a certain guest type or group size, right? And that's fine. But the reality is, like, it's still a pain in the butt to get to Disney World. And if the group's going to Disney World, it's still a pain. And the resorts are actually building areas, more hotels and more areas that can accommodate more people. I think it's only a matter of time before we actually see them being able to host actual group, larger group size where they can rent homes. Maybe they have like a resort community of homes. I could totally see them building that and doing that in certain areas, especially in and around Disney World. And so what's that make for short-term rentals? People who are buying in Kissimmee or Davenport, which is even further south, are just going to be lower and lower and lower on the totem pole of where people actually want to book and stay. Right? You're always second place in terms of location, which is the desirable thing for that area. How close can I be to Disney World? Okay, because that's where you're headed to, or Universal or SeaWorld. Well, I don't know if people are like, oh, I gotta go to SeaWorld or stay, you know, near SeaWorld. But anyway, people go there. I've been to SeaWorld before. But the reality is, like, we want to stay near whatever the main destination is, and that's the number one driver for that particular area. And you'll always be second place. So why does it make sense when you're thinking long-term here to invest in Orlando Kissimmee? Okay. Second reason why I hate that market, I use strong language there, but I do. The level of competition is just insane. So not only is there a lot of competition, the quality of competition, the themed out rooms, the full-on bowling alleys in there, the arcade. I mean, it is insane how much people have to invest just to get in there. It's not just go buy a bunch of the Wayfair arcade Pac-Man machines. You've got to have the full-on arcade machines with the guns or the motorcycle you get on and or the pinball machine, legit. All this different stuff. You have to have it, and it has to look really cool. You got to have the lighting and all these other things. The stuff you don't have to do in most other markets. Okay, you have to have it in this market. It has to be the best of the best. And then the themed out rooms. It's not just, oh, go put wallpaper up of Minnie and Mickey Mouse or the princesses. It's got to be really, really cool stuff. And slides in the rooms and bunk beds that are weird designs and stuff like that. Just, it's on another level. Why the heck would you invest in something unless the returns were stupid good? It just seems like a lot of risk for extremely low reward. When you can take that same amount of capital, go invest that into one, maybe even two properties in another market and have a higher reward or higher revenue number. So why does it make sense to go invest into a Orlando, Kissimmee, or even Davenport? We'll throw Davenport in there. I mean, that should be an off-limits one no matter what. But even the condos, even though it's just so competitive and the amenities there are just on a different level, why go and do that? Why go through the pain of doing that unless it's just somewhere you have to be, your family travels there and it's going to save you or whatever. But I still, at that point, I still don't understand it. So anyway, that's actually one of the top markets I encourage people to avoid altogether. All right, let's keep going through the list. A big one I hear about a lot is, and I want to talk about Destin, Florida area, Miramar Beach, Destin, Panama City Beach, you know, kind of that Emerald Coast area. Look, I love vacation in Destin. We actually go to Destin in January, and we'll be going there soon. And we go there for a few weeks to kind of snowbird, because it's cold as heck in Buffalo and snows a lot. So we get away during the worst time of the year. And we enjoy, it's not super warm in Destin during the winter, but it's nice. It's quiet. Love the beaches, beautiful beaches. I don't go swimming in the ocean anyway. Sharks, and especially they had like 3 attacks there last year. Not going to find me swimming in those waters. But I love looking at the water, and I love the beaches there. And I think Destin's really cool, but boy, oh boy, is it expensive, and it doesn't make sense financially. So a lot of the Emerald Coast, including Panama City Beach, is just overpriced. Does it make it a bad market to be in? Not at all, but you got to get it at the right price. And right now, it's just too expensive for where the revenue's at. In the last 2 to 3 years, we've really seen revenue kind of level off and dip down a tad bit in the Emerald Coast. Meanwhile, the market rate is still appreciated. In the last year, it's kind of dipped down a little bit, but based on the revenue to purchase price ratio, it's still not where we'd like it to be. It's about 10%, meaning on average, this is averages, okay? On average, your average revenue is about 10% of your purchase price of that property. So gross is 100K and the property is a million. Okay, that's not going to pencil out in any world. You top that with rising insurance costs and high taxes because it's on the beach and that beach property is worth something. It doesn't make sense financially. Okay. Now, is it a bad market if you found a sweet deal where that was maybe 15% gross ROI or rent to revenue ratio? Well, yeah, that's a good opportunity. But as a market and as a whole, it's not there. So it's pretty low. So I really just Emerald Coast doesn't make any sense right now. There are better beach markets in Florida to go in. And if guys, and if you're interested, if you're like, oh, well, where? Go listen to the episodes I've done on this already. Go watch the YouTube video. You can go to at Astier Insights. I put out the top 10 markets to invest in. I've got the top 10 markets report that came out, and it's got the top 10 beach markets to invest in. I've got all the places you should invest in. And I mentioned more of those markets than more of the areas that you shouldn't invest in. So remember that. Okay. Now, here, there are some beach markets in Florida. Now, a lot of people are interested in investing in Florida and get it regardless of the insurance costs and taxes and things. But there are some beach markets that have seen a bigger dip. And when we think about Florida, we need to remember that COVID did boom or bust in some of these areas. Maybe not as much as like a Blue Ridge or Broken Bow, like I've talked about, but in some of these markets, we did actually see a bit of a decline in the amount of travel there, especially in the last year or two. And one of those markets, which is south of Emerald Coast, is the Forgotten Coast. And it's kind of ironic, right? The name Forgotten Coast with Port St. Joe and in that area. That area has seen a huge dip, not only in revenue, but also the amount of foot traffic to those areas. Sure, they're building and they're growing and all this good stuff, but the reality is it's getting a lot more competitive and a lot more investors are flooding in where demand is really kind of leveled off or even declined. And what we're seeing in some of these beach markets that are almost like tertiary markets, for example, the Forgotten Coast of Florida, there really isn't, like, you have to fly to Panama City Beach, which is the Emerald Coast, and then drive down. All right, that, sure, there's other ways to get there too, and I'm not discrediting those, but the point is you still have to fly in somewhere and then drive down even further, whereas like you can fly into the Emerald Coast and you're at the Emerald Coast. So those types of beach markets, I'm really, really wary of. We see some of that in the Outer Banks too, like northern Outer Banks, like north of Kitty Hawk and some of those areas, Duck, Corolla, so maybe less talked about. Ocean Isle is another one too. A couple of years ago, they were hot, hot, hot because of COVID, people trying to get away. But once again, the Outer Banks are really, really challenging to get to altogether. But then on top of that too, maybe some of these more remote islands are even harder to get to. And they're just seeing more of a dip in revenue because of that. And so overall, sure, there might be a little bit increase in demand, but supply is, you know, going up even higher. So those markets are getting impacted even more. So personally, I'm encouraging people to avoid investing in those areas because they're just going to see a further dip as a lot of these other bigger areas are stabilizing. When I think of Panama City Beach, you know, versus the Forgotten Coast, when I think of Panama City Beach, you know, they're adding like a, I think a Dollywood down there and like a big Harley Davidson's, not a store, but something, I don't know, park or something like that. They're doing a lot of stuff to that area. And there's going to be a lot of growth, which will take a lot of eyes and traffic away from some of these other areas. And so, you know, Panama City Beach is still pretty pricey and it's not the best to get into, but it's a lot better than going into the Forgotten Coast. A lot better. Okay. And that's what you have to think of. Like, let's go further south. Let's go down to Tampa and like go down. So you got Bradenton and the Anna Maria Island, which is kind of like a hotbed and there's a lot of stuff going on in the area. Then you start going further down. And I think that's where you hit. I need to pull up a map here so I can make sure I get everything correct. So you've got Bradenton Beach, you've got Anna Maria Island, and then you have some of these like other areas. Let's see, I think, do we have Sarasota? Okay, and what you'll notice, Siesta Key, that's the beach one I'm thinking of. What you notice is further south you get from Tampa beyond like Bradenton and like even at Sarasota, the revenue starts to really drop, okay? But housing prices don't really drop, okay? Because it's still prime beach market real estate. So I'm avoiding investing in the types of markets. I mean, some people might call them tertiary markets, and that's kind of true. But they've got a, you know, their own unique, oh, it's a little more quiet or more family friendly. There's less like tourism, like Myrtle Beach crap, like the big Ferris wheel and other things going on here. Those areas are actually hurting more than, say, the Myrtle Beaches or, say, the Bradentons or the Panama City Beaches. You know, so think about that and avoid investing in areas where you're just relying on the 12 months rent to make a decision. Okay. We want to think long-term growth here. How is this growing? How is this expanding? What are they doing to add and really create that demand in that market? I'm avoiding those like kind of off quieter markets because they're coming back. They're really coming back down from reality from the COVID boom. Okay. Let's keep moving. Let's go out west again and let's talk about some of the areas I despise out west. So I wish there was a really good market in Oregon or Washington. There just isn't. It's so bad up there. The numbers just don't make any sense at all. People message me all the time and I get a crack out of it because I'm like, I want to point you in the right direction, but I just don't have anywhere to do it. You know, there's places that are better than others. But when you say better, it's like, okay, cool. This is like a 0% break-even return. And this is like a 5% return. Which one do you like? So if I'm out west, I'm going out east or down southeast, north. I mean, the Midwest, looking somewhere else, especially in the Pacific Northwest. It's the numbers don't make a lot of sense unless you're going to build a tiny home or something very unique. And even then, it's expensive to do that. So it's really challenging to make really any of the numbers out there make any sense at all. They've seen a huge dip too in revenue in a lot of these places. And on top of that, there's high taxes. Insurance has gone up a little bit, not terribly, but it's gone up due to the forest fire issues. And really, it's just not, the regulation is awful in a lot of the parts of Oregon, even parts of Washington as well. So am I looking at the Pacific Northwest to invest in? No, I'll always keep my eye on it because I'd love for it to change. I mean, there's a ton of people who'd like to invest there. It just doesn't make any sense, which leads me now to let's transition to California. So I'm not a big proponent of investing in California, mainly for the tax purposes and potential regulatory issues that they could face in the future with how that state votes. But does that mean there's no opportunity there? There's no deals? No, not at all. We've actually seen some in the Oakhurst area near the national parks. So Oakhurst is near Yosemite. There's also Sequoia, which is there's like a tiny town called Three Forks that we see some stuff there. Oh, I keep going into the, hey, you should check out this area. But the reality is, I'll stop. I'll go back to the, you shouldn't invest in some of these areas. That's fine. The national parks are fine. But the areas that are a little more urban, so I think Coachella, think Palm Springs, even some of the Oceanside and San Diego and really all around like LA, it's too expensive. It doesn't make sense. And maybe from an appreciation standpoint, a buy and hold, but from a purely cash flow, you're not going to cash flow. You're going to break even at best. And it's very competitive. Regulations are tricky. I just don't see a lot of opportunity there, especially in the long run for short-term rentals. So if you're really wanting to cash flow, you really wanting to like stand out and be different, very few places in California are going to make sense. Really, man, I'd love to see something in Oregon or Washington make sense, but it just doesn't. So I just kind of avoid those altogether. Okay, so that was kind of my downer on that. I do want to move to talk about some of the more like Western markets too. So like Montana is a popular one, or even Colorado, the ski towns. Montana and Colorado kind of suffer from the same, well, kind of. So number one, they're really expensive. Number two, Colorado has stupid regulations, especially in the ski markets. I just don't see a lot of opportunity in those. I would love if Montana made more sense. Do we see deals there? Maybe once in a while, once every like 4 to 6 months, do we see something that actually makes sense there? And it's going to be a fixer-upper. It's going to be a value-add play. Same thing in Colorado. Every now and then we'll see something that could make sense, but it's a value-add play or something you got to do or whatever to the property beyond the typical value-add. So it might be like a completely gut reno. It might be that it's a, you know, a two-bedroom that's just happened to be priced right. But rarely can we go in with a set budget and then try to find something that matches that budget and it makes sense. It's just very, very difficult. So I'm not very bullish on Colorado. Maybe in like the suburbs of Denver, it's a little better. But even then, I mean, the returns are kind of very meager. So I just don't really like Colorado. And then in Montana too, I love Montana, but it's a cool state to visit, but man, Big Sky, Whitefish, Missoula, all those areas, they just don't really make sense from a number standpoint. It's way too expensive. Okay. There's a lot less regulation, but the prices of the houses are too expensive and it's a little bit already known. And there's a lot of eyes on it too. So I just kind of say, hey, avoid that area. Once again, what areas would I go to instead of those areas? There's two states that are around both of those states. Go back to my podcast where I tell you where you should look because I tell you those states in that episode. Now, what I want to do is I want to transition to more of some questions that I get from people, like I guess like common questions that I get from people about certain markets and my thoughts on them. Once again, so let me just reiterate. For the most part, I don't like to say don't ever invest in these markets. And I'm sure I'm going to have one client that's going to come to me and say, Kenny, you said in this episode, don't invest here, but yet you're providing me a property in the market. Here's the thing. It's not about the market. It's about the property. And they can work if the numbers make sense. Okay. But in general, am I personally looking to invest in some of these areas? No, unless something pops out that just says, hey, I'm crazy good. But I'm not actively looking in some of these markets for me. And that's kind of what I'm sharing with you guys. All right, so let's go into common. One of the biggest ones that I get, common questions about a market that I get all the time is about the Smokies. How do I feel about the Smokies? There is something that nobody talks about with the Smokies yet. Okay, so the Smokies is probably the top visited short-term rental market in the country. And I'm pretty shocked by that. Like it's, yeah, I don't quite understand it, which is a little bit of a concern to me. Even from my standpoint, like I just don't understand why so many people go there and it's so touristy. Like for a mountain market, it's very touristy. It reminds me of like, I call it the Myrtle Beach of the mountains because it just like, there's like a Ripley's, believe it or not. There's, you know, there's Dollywood, which is a theme park with roller coaster rides. You know, there's a lot of like museums and other, like not like, it's just kind of cheesy touristy stuff. And if you've ever been to like downtown Gatlinburg, it's just, it's too much now, right? Like you go down at nighttime, there's all the bright lights with the souvenir shops and everything. It like really lost a lot of its mountain charm. And you've got draw from Nashville and some of the surrounding areas, and people will fly in to go to Gatlinburg, obviously because of the national park there. But like the reality is like, it just doesn't have the same feel as like maybe in Asheville or Blue Ridge or some of the other areas, more mountain areas that are just more quiet. Which is typically what you'd expect for the Appalachia or the Smoky Mountains. I mean, the rest of the whole area, go all the way up to Maine, it's just different than the Smokies. And so what I've noticed, though, is they're, number one, they're building a lot of like short-term rental communities. Like there was, I talked to one agent, I'm listing 115 houses they just built. You're like 115 short-term rental homes are just going to go on the market like that. Okay. And it's not just one subdivision. There's multiple subdivisions of this going on. They have indoor pools or views or all this like fancy stuff and high level of competition. And for me personally, that's a little bit worrisome unless you're in the perfect area. You got in at the right time or you're in like the perfect area. You got it at the right price. Maybe somebody who's like desperate that's wanting to sell. But for me, I just don't see investing in the Smokies as a long-term play. I don't. And the reason why is because we have to understand the guest avatar, especially if we're looking from a long-term perspective. They're building all these like luxury houses that are super fancy and nice and have all these amenities. But who is the guest avatar that's actually going to the Smokies? Is it the top 1% of the United States going to the Smokies? No, people from New York City rarely go there. Okay. Or people from like LA or like, you know, these big time San Francisco, these tech areas, Austin or wherever, they're not going to Gatlinburg. Okay. It's your blue collar people. Can blue collar people afford to just think about it? Can blue collar people afford year in and year out to go to like some nice luxury stay for a week or 2 weeks or whatever? No, they don't. Right? They have a budget and they stick to it. Okay. And what we're seeing in the Smokies is as we add more luxury supply, what people are expecting is that ADRs are supposed to naturally rise with that, right? Because it's all these luxury stays. But the problem is your avatar is not going for the luxury property. I mean, they want to, and maybe they are staying in some of the luxury properties, but there's a very minute part of the population where all of these builders and all these people who are buying short-term rentals, investing in the Smokies are trying to target. and they're targeting a small percentage of their actual people and what their affordable rates would be. And so what's ending up happening is that you're going to end up with, you know, law, like let's talk economics. Naturally, over time, prices of these luxury homes or all cabins really in the Smokies will start to decline, which they already are, to match what people are willing to pay. When you think of even like a Scottsdale or an Austin, Texas, or even a Nashville, Tennessee, people are willing to pay a little bit more because they have more money or funds, and it's just higher end, nicer areas. The problem though with the Smokies is, okay, you can force something, you can have something really nice and luxury there, but if you add too much supply to that market, that doesn't mean all of a sudden there's just magically more people who are willing to pay more. And that's the problem I have with the Smokies is I think it definitely, I mean, we've already seen it level out and then start to dip in price. I just don't think it's just going to jump up in price ever again. And if anything, I think it will continue to decline. If you look at the number of properties for sale in that market, it is significantly higher. It's 60% more year over year, the number of properties for sale in that market. So 60% more year over year. And which means there's a lot of supply available. And you could find some opportunity there, but I think it's incredibly difficult. We have a hard time. We always look there because it's a big popular market. Everybody wants to be there for the most part. And we always look there. And every now and then we see something where there's a seller who's willing to work, you know, and kind of recognize some of these things and they want to get out of the property. But overall, it's a challenging market to get into. And frankly, I don't see it as something that's just going to be a long-term play for anybody, especially as they're building more and more properties. I'm very wary of the Smokies from a long-term perspective. Let's talk about, so I've already hit on Blue Ridge and Broken Bow in the previous episode. And I mean, it's no secret. I despise those markets. So go back, listen to part one if you haven't heard me talk about those markets. Let's talk about some markets I've sent people to and how they've changed over time. The first one I want to talk about, and this is really important. I know a lot of my listeners have invested there, or even some of my clients have invested there too. And that's Asheville, North Carolina. So I know this market very, very well. I have family there. I actually go there quite a bit to visit my family, but I also have a lot of clients there. And I have clients who are as far as I know, they're all doing very, very well there. And I think there's some tremendous opportunity there, but there's a big caveat. And I've actually started to advise people to, not everyone is a good fit for Asheville, North Carolina now. Okay. Last year at probably like mid-year, I was like, oh yeah, this is like anybody could invest here at any budget point and find some sort of success. But the reality is that that's changed. Okay. Not just with the storm that hit in October, they're really recovering, they're bouncing back, and that's great. But not only that, but the level of competition has gone way up, way, way, way up. Okay. And so to a point where I don't believe if you don't have the funds to invest into the property, I call it the 20% rule, meaning you have to have 20% of whatever the purchase price is just to invest into the property for it to be successful. Okay. Now that's conservative. That's a lot. So if I had bought a $500,000 home, I should prepare to spend at least 20%. So $100,000 into design, decor, and amenities, not the down payment, Okay. So you should have $100,000 plus room for the down payment just to invest. That's extreme. But when you think about it, when you're paying a designer, okay, you're also bringing in someone to maybe furnish, or if you're going to furnish it, fine, but someone to design, but add all the cool amenities and really change the place. Like you're seeing a lot of properties there. It's expensive and it adds up. Okay. I have a lot of clients there and they've had to spend a lot just to get to these, like have the high end, like 90 percentile places, which is what we want to shoot for in the markets we invest in. And if you don't have the funds, then Asheville isn't a good market to go to. Okay. I know that's that hurts some people's feelings who sell homes there, but that's just the truth. Okay. Like it just is what it is. I have to speak that. I have to tell people that because to be honest, like no one else does. And we need to have somebody who speaks up for every type of investor and is realistic when it comes to these things. And I feel like that's my job. So should you avoid investing in Asheville? Yes, if you don't have the capital to be able to invest into your property there and be at that high level. Okay. Otherwise, if you do, then yeah, there is tremendous opportunity there. And I do think that it is a good market to check out, especially being in the right location, but it's changed. Okay. And it did not make my top 10 list to invest into. One of the final markets I want to talk about, maybe I'll hit depending on time. Let's dive into Newry Bethel area. So last year and the year before, I talked about Newry Bethel as this emerging, awesome market to invest in. And it has been. We've actually seen increases in revenue and great things happening for people who pulled the trigger there. But I've also seen an increased level of competition there as well, to a point where, you know, that and also hearing from our clients and people who've invested in that market, we've heard a number of issues with getting the right help. So people to help set up the property and contractors and people to do snow plowing and other things. They said that they're starting to gouge people there because there's not enough resources and there's not enough competition of services. So they just charge whatever they want and the owners don't have options to go with somebody else because they're the only option there, that service. And so it's been really challenging. And it's one of those markets where, as we've seen the level of competition increase, you really, really have to be in the right location. You have to have the right type of property, the right type of views, the right type of amenities and everything. And does it make sense to invest there if you find that perfect property? Okay. That sounds pretty, you know, similar to maybe, you know, even the Smokies or some of these other areas where you got to find the perfect property that matches all the right criteria to find that right opportunity. Now, am I saying, is it as competitive as the Smokies? No, not yet. But it's getting there, guys. Before, I remember all these, there were no pool property. There was like one or two and there were big, big, big properties. Now there's pool properties on a two bedroom all the way up to, you know, a seven or eight bedroom. It's just the competition is increasing there. Is it a market that you should avoid? Yes, if you can't find the right property. Okay. And it's hard. Inventory is tough there in terms of finding that right property. So just those are the two markets that I've really pumped up in the last year or two that have changed. And we're going to see the data kind of change too. If you're already invested there, I want to be cautious. Okay. If you've already invested there, are you done? Are you out? Is it the end of the world? Kenny said, oh, be careful. No, I'm not talking about you. You got in at the right time. You got the right property that has the right attributes and everything about it. I'm talking about people who are wanting to invest today. Today, if you're wanting to invest today into these markets, this is what you're going against, okay? If you're already there, you've gotten at the right price. I'm sure you got the right location, the right views, whatever you need. It's already there. So don't panic. Don't worry. Even if you're in the Smokies or some of these other markets like Branson, Missouri, for example, and you bought, you know, a couple of years ago and it's like in the cookie cutter resorts, but you're still cash flowing or whatever, that's fine. That's great. Good for you. But if you were going in there today, I sure as heck know you wouldn't do the same thing. You wouldn't buy the same property because it's overpriced. It's the same thing for some of these other markets, okay? That's how I want you to approach it. Don't think I'm crapping on any markets that you're currently in or currently invested in, or I'm just saying, if I'm going in today, where would I not invest? And like I said, it's not that I don't ever look in these places. It's just you have to be careful. I do like Newry Bethel and Asheville a lot more than all the other markets I named. So don't think it's an X on those markets. It's just more competitive. So change how you think about investing there than maybe 6 months to a year ago. Okay. One of the last markets I want to talk about is Scottsdale, Phoenix, Arizona. So this is more of an urban market, but technically a vacation market in and of itself, especially Scottsdale. I think this market is very, very saturated and very, like, just super competitive. I know some of the best designers and co-hosts live and operate in Scottsdale. The level of competition there is at another level. And like, I think the Poconos too, let's talk about the Poconos, throw the Poconos here. Like, I think it's very competitive as well, but it's also like not, like there's still opportunity there. Okay. And I see a lot of those same people operating the Poconos and they're crushing it. But in Scottsdale, like everybody's operating at this like really, really high level and you got to know your stuff. And I just don't like, why would you go there? Especially if it's your first one. Why the heck would you go look in Scottsdale? First off, you're going to have to invest a ton into the property just to get it, just for it to make any sense at all from a revenue standpoint. You probably overpaid for it. Okay. But let's say that you got it for a steal and you weren't wanting to put a bunch of money into it. Okay. Great. Okay. Now you have to operate it at that high level too. Okay. It's like two things. You, like anyone new starting out, you're not going to be good at both things. Right? That's just how it is. Like, I mean, I'm not even like that great. I'm good at operating and it's from just like experience, but I'm not like great at it. Like other people, like the co-hosts and stuff out there in the world. And that's fine. That's not, I focus on the finding. Okay, but are you really going to find and operate at that high level too? What are the odds of that happening? Probably slim to none. So I really don't like that market. I don't like that market at all. I think it's a terrible market to invest in, especially for new people. And I think it's an area where even if you found the perfect property, just the runway is so short and the margin for error is so slim that it just doesn't make any sense. So anyway, all right. Now that I've crapped on pretty much every market in the United, I'm just kidding. I haven't done that. Actually, really haven't done that because you need to go back and listen to my list of markets you should invest in and where you should invest. Go back to those episodes. All right, guys. If you like this episode, be sure to like and subscribe, whether you're in a podcast or have you checked out the YouTube channel at Cashflow Positive, where we have the videos and you can see my face. Maybe you don't want to see my face and that's okay, but check out the YouTube channel and be sure to subscribe to that channel to see the latest and greatest on there as well. And guys, all is not lost just because I shot down a bunch of markets. I provide a list of the top markets to invest in based off of budget, destination type, and my top picks. It is STR. It's on STR. If you go to strinsights.com, at the top, there's a banner that says, check out the top markets report for 2025. Click download. It'll take you to a download screen, fill out a form, and I will personally email you that markets report. It's got over 80 different markets across the United States that are good markets to invest in with the numbers and why you should invest in them. So be sure to check out that report. Be sure to subscribe to the channel, like and subscribe to it. And if you feel strongly about anything that I just said, feel free to reach out to me. Let's have a conversation about it and let me tell you why you're wrong. I'm just kidding. Just kidding. But seriously, reach out to me. We'll talk. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I hope you don't feel like everything is doom and gloom and you found some value from this and perspective. That's really what it's about. It's about perspective, meaning like if I'm going to start my buying journey, how should I approach this? Okay. That's what I want you to focus on. Not Kenny hates these markets, but for buyers today, how they should approach finding and acquiring in the best locations as possible to maximize their returns and cash flow positive. My name is Kenny Bedwell, and I will see you on the next episode.